You're listening to Under a Red Glow, a photography podcast covering the wide spectrum of the art and history of photography with an emphasis on chemical, darkroom, and alternative-based processes. Be sure to visit us at www.underaredglow.com. And now your host, John Milliker Jr.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Under a Red Glow podcast. My name is John Milliker, and with me in studio is my co-host and lovely wife, Christine. Christine, I ask you this every week. How have you been? But the problem is I know how you've been. We live together.
Yeah.
But at least we can still talk about it.
Yeah.
But how have you been?
It's been a good week. We had some time with our parents, which is always nice. Both your parents and my parents. And we've been trying to get back to organizing the house more. Actually, I think we've been more organizing to get to the reorganizing.
It's been tough because we've started getting into busy again. We've been busy all summer, but we've been getting busy into, we've got an event coming up. The first event of the season, mind you, here it is in September, and we're going to be going to the first event of our season. And thankfully, that's still out. I'm just hoping that the weather holds out. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a little bit of traveling that we're doing mm-hmm. in the next several weeks. So yeah, it's been tough getting into the organization. We have so many things to donate, to put on eBay, to put online, and the problem is a lot of these donation places are not, you know, they're either not taking donations or they're not open. We've got some specialized donation stuff that we want to make sure it gets to the right place, but instead it's filling up our dining room. But yes. But eventually I think we've talked about this before. The dark room is in it's updated and pristine working order. The studio is in pristine working order. The dry dark room and the wet dark room's good. It's a lot of fun, but now it's time. We're getting into fall. We're getting at the end of summer. And it's really time to kind of get this taken care of, because I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, that when things start opening up again in the spring next year, typically our first event is end of April, beginning of May, because that's when the weather is just starts to get perfect. I'm hoping we're raring and ready to go.
Yes.
So.
And next year maybe I get to go to an event.
Yeah, it'll be nice.
I'm missing it this year.
Not satisfied with our laptop debacle, we decided to tempt fate and purchase new phones with 4K video capabilities. That way we can do a little bit more with streaming and videos. And I only bring this up because I always love looking at the options that they're putting in a cell phone nowadays. But these phones have two cameras, and they have a fake blur background option that I'm not really sure if I've figured out yet. But everything I've seen so far, it's completely terrible. It seems to try to compute depth of field instead of actually know what depth of field really is. I think the SLR cameras and now the mirrorless cameras have nothing to worry about for at least a few more years. And I was sitting there looking at myself, making faces in the selfie camera and playing with that depth of field feature. And like I said, it failed miserably. But surely this phone had the camera killing option that we were all looking for, and I found it.
What's that?
I could click a button, and it put fake animal ears on me, made my eyes big and twinkly with a small button nose. I was totes adorbs, as the kids would say.
Uh-huh. I think our niece would love that.
Oh, geez, yeah. Seriously, though, for all these filters and stickers and word bubbles and everything, how come it's getting harder and harder to find a darn negative filter on these phones? Thankfully, some of the simple apps will allow us to work with the curves and do the same thing. But I remember a few revisions back of these phones, it was one of the top filters. You know, negative, click, boom, done.
How do you get a negative from curves?
It's actually pretty simple. As long as you have something that has the actual curves and the sliders for the curves, you could do this in your photo editor of choice as well. You grab the bottom left black handle and drag it all the way up top left. And then you grab the upper right white handle and drag it all the way down to the bottom right, and instant negative, which is actually quite good for us because we do photograph a lot of negatives. A lot of our alternative process stuff will come out as negatives as well. And, you know, sometimes you just want to be able to share it and, you know, give the people the ability to look at it as a positive instead of a negative.
It has come in handy with my paper negatives.
For sure, for sure.
You also released another video from your isolation project. Can you tell us about that?
You know, it was only a simple making of video. One of the few times that I remember to set up our cameras before working in the darkroom. Usually I'm into the process enough that I don't want to ruin a piece, risk getting chemicals on the camera, get out of the mood, all that fun. The video just followed along in making one of the photos in my project called Virtual Forests Do No Justice. And that was using the platinum palladium process. And it is a short video. I think it's about 7.5 minutes long. And I talk about processing the video, processing the photo, a little bit about digital manipulation, the thought that went into processing the photo the way I did, as well as coding and developing the paper. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but give it a shot. And if you like it, give it one of those thumbs up and maybe even subscribe to the channel. We put things out every so often. We're trying to get better at a schedule, and we're trying to get better at just getting everything out. But, you know, baby steps.
Baby steps.
I think I'm happy with the graphics and credits, too, on the YouTube video, as well as YouTube's got these end cards. I'm finally getting into learning about that. It's so much better than any of the other ones I made. Yes, sirree. I'm not missing any of the old ones in the least.
You forgot to save them, didn't you?
Yeah, you betcha. And you made a platinum palladium print that day, too.
Yeah, it was from your photograph and negative, but it was really fun to be able to practice the process. It's one that I've always watched you do and was a little bit afraid to do myself because I know how expensive the chemicals for it can be.
Boy, howdy.
But it was fun, and I'd like to try it again sometime.
One of the chemicals is, I'm drawing a blank. Is it the sodium chloroplatinate?
I think so,
it's a 5% solution. 10 mils of this is about $200. So it's a little costly. It's definitely more costly than tin types and amber types, I think. But I don't do it very often. I pull the stuff out for special projects. I pull the stuff out for workshops or private lessons, which unfortunately we've had to postpone several of them this year. But in fact, I had somebody email me 2 weeks ago looking for platinum palladium process workshop. And I told him, like, you know, I'm sorry, but the problem is you need to get right in there with me, because platinum palladium has this certain sheen to the paper. You need to get it to the sheen without damaging the paper. And I talk about this in the video as well. And I apologize. It's not that I don't want to do, not that I don't want to teach somebody the process, because I love, of course, we love every process, but I love platinum palladium. But yeah, it's just pretty difficult. And the photo that you had done for me was one of our, if you saw the Fairy Tale Denied video, we also photographed a few photos with digital, in digital. And I had captured the same lovely young lady that was in the Fairy Tale Denied tintype. I captured her sitting alone in front of one of the stages of the Maryland Renaissance Festival. And very, very alone, very isolated. I was able to, I didn't do much to that print. I just negatived it and turned it black and white. And then I printed it to a digital negative. And I wanted to make a platinum palladium print of that. So I gave Christine's really creative when it comes to brush strokes. I'm more of a rod coating kind of guy. I want to get the entire page coated. I'm not a big fan of all those brush strokes. Although with platinum palladium, I am. But it all depends on the photo, right? But Christine coated that for me and exposed it, and she developed it. And that is going to an auction, right, Christine?
Yes.
That's all rolled up in a mailing tube, ready to ship out to the lucky winner of what's this auction about?
Well, I'm interested to see how well it does, but we donated it to an auction that offers financial support to Renaissance Fair artists who sadly don't have anywhere to sell their creations this year. The print is going to auction is specifically set aside for the Maryland artists for the Maryland Renaissance Festival. So it's our local festival, and it's supposed to start very soon.
It was supposed to start very soon, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe this episode will go out after the auction closes, but I will post details to the Facebook page. Make sure you're liking us on the Facebook page. We have surpassed 150 likes on the Facebook page this week. And again, I thank everybody for liking us. And as I said, we're getting more and more emails, and we're getting a couple comments on Facebook as well. But we pose a question to everybody at the end of the episode that lines up with the topic, and we really want to hear from you, because we can talk about certain things the episode after, right?
Right.
We did get some great feedback, however. We've gotten some great feedback from people over last week's episode. First off, Quinn Jacobson left a message that you were right about last week, when one of his Ghost Dance photographs was of the very same sunflowers that he carbonized and then added to his carbon printing gelatin, which carbon printers affectionately call glop.
He also said that he loves when artists and photographers address these more conceptual topics. He says it's technical with a reason. Content and intention, craft and concept. And I completely agree with that.
I do too. I'm very happy with last week's podcast and how we were able to verbalize our thoughts on doing more than just pushing that camera button. Whether it's a digital photo, whether it's a cell phone photo, or whether it's a tintype or a negative or something you had to do many steps of, there's always something you can do, and that's just... that's just amazing. That's what I love. I love, 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 love. We also had a nice message from a lady named Melissa. She messaged us that she once made a mini photo album for her family's vacation photos by cutting up and hand binding a book using paper maps of the area. And I thought that was really creative.
That is. That's a great idea. It reminds me of the B-roll shots you always ask me to get for our photo books when we do events.
Oh, it's less elegant than a beautifully handcrafted book, but it's similar. An example for people is instead of making a wedding photo book with just boring solid color pages, I always ask my second and third shooters to look for what I call B-roll photos. And that's like fancy wallpaper in the wedding reception hall, the sand from a beach wedding, the detail on the back of the bride's dress, and keep them simple. Fade them almost all the way out, and use that instead for the backgrounds of pages.
And when people realize it, they love it.
It's a little Easter egg, because most people don't realize it. The photos are there. And between the photos, the empty space is this very faded photo. I usually don't tell anybody about it, but I know about it, and it excites me the entire time I'm creating the book. You also came up with two more examples as well, didn't you?
After Melissa's message, I was reminded about when we were experimenting with making paper.
Oh, that's been a while.
Yeah. I remember researching what other paper makers were making, and many would add wild flower petals to the paper. And while I've not done it yet myself, I have notes to try it with maybe some of our crushed lavender petals and then make a photogram of a bunch of lavender flowers.
You might want to hurry up. Our lavender plant flowers seem to have their days numbered.
I'll work on it.
And the second idea that you had, you like finding books, antique books,
mm-hmm.
and you like trying to use them as a binder. You like using the pages of these antique books, and you like using them for photograms of different alternative processes. Now, I know that you're a stickler. You don't want to buy it. You don't like buying books that are in good condition. You buy books that are pretty much falling apart and are very, very shortly destined for the trash bin. But I know you bought a book recently at one of the antique or thrift shops that we went to several months ago, and it was a book on plants, right?
Right.
And what have you? I know you've done a couple things with that book. What's your intention for that book?
Well, most of the time I make cyanotypes in it with pick up a type of plant that's on the page and use it to make a photogram. Sometimes I'll do anthotypes, but typically I do keep with my cyanotypes.
Right. Oh. And you've been putting the page back where it came from, kinda,
yes.
Which I think is really cool. I love the idea of doing the books, but I work it a little bit differently. I like looking at the books, and I'll just look at the page. And if there's a title, maybe I'll play off the title, but I like looking at the page, and the first 2, 3, 4 words that jump out at me, I'll kind of note them down in the corner. I think one was I can't remember what one I made was, but I use those 3 or 4 words as inspiration for putting a photo, you know, exposing a negative or exposing a photogram on that. And I've only done a few of those, but I really want to continue with that because I love that. The fact that you're taking a page out of a book and you're kind of relying on luck in order to have that page speak to you of what it wants to be have put on it.
Yeah.
Speaking of luck, with this being lucky episode number 7, I'm devoting the topic to luck in photography. What do you think? Would you rather be lucky or good?
Well, I want to know what I'm shooting, but sometimes it does take a little bit of luck, but you can enhance that luck by using tools that will help you get what you are after. Do some research, go to a place you know, maybe where figure out where the sun's coming up or what angle it's going to be at. Think about the time of day. Try to go when the light's not going to be so harsh or straight down. Put thoughts into the photos you plan to take, and a little bit of work before you go can really help you get the shot that you're dreaming of.
I'm glad you said that, because before we decided to record this episode, you didn't really look at my definition and I didn't really look at your definition. But let's continue. Think about some of the best photographs you've ever made. Were they lucky or were you good?
Define good.
Good not like pretentiously good, but good isn't prepared. You learned about your camera, your subject, the location of the subject. It's not that I don't think luck doesn't exist, but with proper planning, my point is that I believe you can make your own luck. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're invited to photograph a baseball game. Let's pretend you know nothing about the sport or that one of the players is a base-stealing king. You might be focused on the pitcher or the batter and miss such an important aspect of the game. You can sit there and photograph the same shot of batters all night, and you might be happy about that. But to grab that iconic photo of a player sliding to second base in a cloud of dirt, that's luck. But backed by a whole lot of knowing the game, being prepared, backed by a whole lot of knowing how your camera works, and backed by a whole lot of practice. So in this instance, being prepared and ready to me is better than luck any day.
But luck still plays a big part. Ansel Adams can't travel to El Capitan, and if the weather is terrible, the weather is terrible.
And, you know, I agree with that. And if you're ever in a situation where you have every single thing ready to go, and you're rolling the dice on something that is purely luck, and you get good weather, make sure you're ready for it. And this just isn't a topic for photographers, for artists. I think it's really a topic for life. Did you think about a few of your top photos?
Yes, I have a few in mind.
Okay, tell me a few.
Well, my favorite one, at least right now, is my photo from Ellicott Falls. I think it's my favorite photo I've ever taken. I love the double swirls on it, and I thank you for your help in helping me capture it.
What did we do to prepare? Was that luck? Was that luck that we just happened to go to a waterfall and happened to walk where the staff said you needed to be an experienced hiker? You didn't need to be an experienced to take your time, but you didn't need to be an experienced hiker. Was it luck that we just wandered upon this beautiful waterfall with this area in the I guess the rocks there where the water just seems to swirl?
No, we did research. Well, you did a little more than I did, but you knew what the potential of that waterfall was.
Right.
And therefore, you helped me prepare and helped me get the right settings and to capture that.
But that also depended on knowing your location as well. Knowing right. that we're going to have to hike. We're going to have to pack light. We're going to have to pack our cameras in backpacks so that we can traverse down to the bottom of this waterfall.
Yes.
We knew tripod.
Yes.
We knew shutter release.
Mm-hmm.
We knew neutral density filter because it was a bright day that day.
It was.
And without neutral density filters, I don't think you would have been able to get nearly the best swirl that you could have. What else?
One of my other favorite photos I've ever gotten, I got 2 from whenever I went and watched at NASA Endeavour launch.
Yeah.
Which I was prepared for that because you were lucky and got to go almost a year before to see Atlantis get launched. And so you helped me prepare. You helped me take my tripod, know which lenses to take. Like, I knew that getting a 400 2.8 was too much.
Oops. That was a $13,000 oopsie.
But you loved it all the same.
I didn't return it.
You didn't return it. And God knows you got your use out of that lens. And I hopefully will be able to help you get the Nikon version someday.
Oh, we're saving for it. We're saving for it one of these days. But anyway, to keep everybody in the dark. Sorry. When I had traveled to photograph, this was the last launch of Space Shuttle Atlantis. And I was invited down to Kennedy Space Center to photograph it from the beautiful iconic countdown clock. God, I love that thing. Nowadays, it's a digital clock, which is totally has no soul to it. But anyway, it was my chance to buy that lens that I've wanted forever, the Canon 400 2.8 IS, $12,000-$13,000. I can't remember what it was. And I'm down there, and we're only 3.3 miles away from the launch at the press area of Kennedy Space Center. And I set up, and I'm ready to photograph, and I've got my tripod up, I've got my 400 on there, I've got the big ball head, not the ball head, it was one of those not Arca Swiss, I can't remember the name, Wembley, was one of those big Wembley heads for the 400, because that lens is heavy and it's huge, and it was too much. I was nearly filling the frame with, well, I wasn't filling the frame with the launch tower and the space shuttle, but knowing ahead of time, I knew that the clouds were what I wanted. I wanted the clouds at the bottom of my photo, and I wanted them to, kind of splay out and get my shot. So I have everything invested in this camera and a 400 lens, and at the last minute, maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes, something like that, I decide I need to get my other camera out. And I think I already had it anyway, but I wasn't expecting to use it. And when the space shuttle launched, I don't think I got one shot with the 400 lens. and my 70 to 200 was what I used. And that, you know, actually that photo, that should be a good luck or good photo, because that photo, I remember posting it on Flickr. Flickr back then was king for photography, and that photo blew up around the world. It was on Flickr, Explore, several of the sites had picked it up, and I'm in the airport thinking, what in the heck is going on with my phone, because it was just notification after notification after notification. But anyway, less about me, but more about you.
And even, well, that was your Atlantis shot, but I got my Endeavor shots, and yeah. I wasn't as lucky as you, because it was a totally cloudy day, and it didn't take long till Endeavor was above the clouds.
You were less lucky than me, because that wasn't the first attempt at the launch.
Right, that was my second time going down to get it. So
she rushed home. She rushed home on an airplane, and I said, "Hon, you're not going to get this chance again. This is the last three launches of the space shuttle program. Get your butt on that plane, go back down there. I don't care if they scrub that launch 10 more times. You get on the plane and you go down to KSC, Kennedy Space Center, every single launch opportunity until you get your shot." Thankfully, the second launch opportunity, they sent it up, but as she said, the clouds kind of came up. But hey, maybe that's a topic for another episode, just those amazing things you photographed. But I know you share the same sentiment as I do of seeing six human beings leave the earth.
I admit that even though it disappeared behind the clouds, I love the hook of the shadow as it went above the clouds in one of my shots.
Oh, to heck with the photos. I'm talking about the emotion. The emotion of just seeing these people disappear, and you know, just an hour earlier, you waved at them in the iconic chrome or polished NASA Airstream camper.
Yeah.
It was very emotional. It was very dusty, and somebody was, all these people were cutting onions around me that day. It was crazy.
Well, you have to understand, for me, when I finally got to watch it go off, the first time I saw it go out, I watched it turn around in front of us.
And I remember that.
What the heck? And I was like on the phone, I'm like, it's turning around. Why is it turning around?
Yeah, I was on the phone with you and you told me that, and I'm like, uh-oh. Well, at the time, NASA, you know, back when Twitter was king, NASA, that you got more updates on Twitter, yeah, from NASA than anywhere else. So I'm feeding you stuff, and because I know, especially with that many people in the press area, I know it was really difficult getting really good service. So I'm pinging you stuff, and I thought at first, like, okay, not a problem, because I dealt with the same thing. Like right before takeoff for Atlantis, they did eventually send Atlantis up one more time. So I didn't get the last shot of Atlantis, but when they were getting ready to take off Atlantis, they found this bolt or nut in the bottom of the crew cabin. And the problem is they got to find out what in the heck that nut went to before they can approve the launch. And thankfully they found out that it was to some kind of camera equipment. And they're like, yeah, it's no problem. You can, you know, deal with that. All the nuts.
Yeah.
But as soon as they turned around the Airstream, and it was done. It was some kind of a problem with the was it fueling?
It was something, and it took them another 2 weeks to feel comfortable sending it up. So yeah. I came home for 2 weeks. Somehow, magically, I was able to go back and watch it again, and I had some friends help me make it happen, and I was there, and yeah, it was amazing.
That's wild.
Anyway, what about your photos that you think were your...
I knew you were going to ask me that. And I'm glad you did, because I have the perfect personal example. The air show shot. You know the air show shot.
Mm-hmm.
The air show shot, I was photographing performers in a stunt formation from a chase plane. And just the season prior, the iconic pier at this beachfront, oceanfront resort destination was damaged in a hurricane. And they had just gotten it repaired. And it was kind of a big deal. This is an iconic pier that I remember playing on as a kid when I was young. And yeah, it was damaged and then repaired. I think it was repaired. It was finally repaired a couple weeks before the actual air show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. But what parts of this was lucky and what parts were good?
Well, good was the opportunity. The ability to pre-visualize what I wanted, the knowledge to have my camera set so that I was wide enough to make the shot happen, and I stopped down enough not only to blow the airplane props a little bit, but you also want to make sure that the background, the pier that I wanted several hundred feet down, was also in focus. And if I wasn't prepared, I could have had the wrong lens or the wrong settings, and hanging out of the open door of an airplane is not the time or place to be changing a lens around.
No, it's not. And what was the lucky part?
Hoping to photograph two airplanes from a third higher plane would give me the angle on the newly rebuilt pier. And I was prepared to get it in the frame no matter wherever it appeared in the frame. But as luck would have it, I saw it out of the corner of my eye coming up fast. I held my breath, and as soon as the pier was between the wheels of the front stunt plane, I squeezed the shutter button.
And that won you some awards, didn't it?
If anything, that was luck. It was a solid photo, I feel, but by luck, it was the best in show. Any other photojournalist of all the area papers could have easily applied good to a scene and with a little luck, grabbed a photo that was leaps and bounds over mine. So it was a good shot, but it was also a lucky shot as well. Mm-hmm. And I think luck is more in play at the end of the day when it comes to people viewing your work as well. Oh, I have another example, and stay with me here because we're gonna make a hard right turn off the topic here. But when we were planning, remember I told you how luck and good applies to everything, just not photography and artists. It applies to life.
Mm-hmm.
When we were planning our outdoor wedding, what did I make sure happened?
Well, you made sure that I had contingency well, that we had contingency plans for everything. We even had a phone number of the local pizza place just to make sure, just in case the caterer didn't show up.
Exactly. I said, be prepared for everything. It would have been lucky for the weather to hold out, the caterer to be on time, the DJ to be ready to go, the rental company truck to not break down. But when you can, hope for luck. And when luck isn't on your side, be ready just in case.
And thankfully, everything went pretty perfectly.
And I'm thankful for that, but we were prepared. If one part of that day had failed, we were ready for it. That made planning the day enjoyable, and our guests, I think, enjoyed it being there with us in that frame of mind. And honestly, nothing could have happened that, within reason, we didn't have a backup plan for. Now, do you think our guests noticed how relaxed and prepared we were? And that we, and do you think that really made them more at ease?
I know that they might have sensed that. I think that that would have put them a little more at ease, or...
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
They did for sure. If we were frantic and watching for every service provider to arrive and making sure everything was set up properly and keeping an eye on the horizon for rain clouds or keeping our nose in our phones watching the radar, they would have noticed it. But instead, we walked in without a care in the world, and I think that really helps out in not only that situation but many situations.
Right.
Before this turns into a wedding planning podcast, the same can be said for photographers, for artists, and for, as I said, you and your life. How's the phrase go? Plan for the worst, hope for the best. When you take the time to be prepared for nearly everything, your clients, friends, family, spouse, kids are going to feel more relaxed around you. And that's why I think it's better to be good than lucky.
But luck never hurts.
You want to have luck on your side. Don't cross any black cats. Don't open any umbrellas and doors. And I think, does that also apply for that? I don't think that applies for photographic umbrellas, right?
I'd hope not.
I hope not. We're gonna make a precedent here. We're gonna sit there and say that the bad luck of opening an umbrella indoors does not apply to a photographic lighting umbrella. I think that works good.
Well, I'd hope not, because we'd be sure unlucky people if that was the case.
Yeah, right. but I'm giving a call out to all our listeners to go on our Facebook page by searching Under a Red Glow and post your luckiest photograph you ever made. But you've got to tell us how your skill set and preparation contributed to that luck. And if you don't use Facebook, feel free to email me at podcast@underaredglow.com. And as always, your comments may make it into a future episode. I all want to give a big thank you to everyone for continuing to join us and all the love and support we've gotten from people liking us on Facebook, subscribing and rating us on your podcast platform of choice. And also a big thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. For a buck, you get our shows early without ads with our after show, which we are getting ready to record now. And we also have some other great supporter tiers. In addition to that, you get our YouTube videos early as well. Our Patreon supporters have been enjoying that video of the Platinum Palladium print since, I think Friday. I'm not sure. All of our show links can be found in our show notes and also on www.underaredglow.com. And now with episode 7 down, it's been our absolute pleasure spending this time with you. Please be sure to subscribe to Under a Red Glow on your podcast listening app of choice. And if we've earned your recommendation to other photographers of any level, process, or gear, we would certainly appreciate you sharing us with them. A big thank you to my co-host Christine Milliker and, of course, everyone for listening. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to visiting with you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.